Welcome back. Taking a look at the markets picture, starting off with things in the U.S. We saw the Dow Jones jump 400 points, led by Apple, as U.S. delays China tariffs on cell phones and clothing. Over in Europe, stocks closed higher as U.S. delayed those China tariffs on those items of. Well, still with me in studio is Jean-Pierre Foster from Protea Capital Management and Gary Boyson from Rand Swiss. So we've got a question about ShopRite. Someone wants to know, what is your view on ShopRite right now? Is it one of those that you buy now or you wait until the economy gets better?
It depends on the price. that's the thing with investments. It's a two-track process. You need to sort of have an idea of the prospects of the company and how that might change in future, but then also how much of that change has been discounted in the share price. And only when you differ on those both those variables is an opportunity to make money. In the case of ShopRite, I think it's been expensive for quite a while, or traded at a premium, as one might say. That premium has now sort of disappeared with the share price coming back quite a bit as the environment has deteriorated. So the share price has been discounting the tougher prospects of the company. I think we're near the point where it might have discounted all the prospects. And then the question is, well, could the prospects get even worse than the current expectation? If that is the case, that means there's more downside. Or if we are near a turning point and the economic prospects of the country and GDP growth and consumer sentiment picks up, then we might be near the end and the share price will pick up. So at the moment, I think it's fair in terms of the price relative to the expectation. So what will drive the price from here for ShopRite is the change in the expectation of what the economy will do.
All right. Gary, this one's for you. Please ask Gary, would he buy Sasol or Aspen at these levels?
I would. I hold both of them at these levels. So I definitely would, because I do. I think both of them have gone through like a torrid time. I mean, you look at what's happened to Aspen. I think from highs, Aspen's down. It's close to 75% off all-time highs. You look at Aspen. Aspen's obviously got its debt issues. There was a large sell-off when it withdrew its cautionary recently. It's trying to obviously right-size the portfolio, bring down the gearing in the business, and everyone looked at that as the deal's not going through, so we should punish the share price further. But you've got to remember that Stevenside has a large stake in this business. He's been buying into the business as well. Whenever you buy a listed company like Aspen, you're essentially also trusting management to an extent to make the right deals on your behalf. And, you know, with the size of the skin, the amount of skin in the game that he has, I would assume that if he didn't want to do the deal, there was a very good reason for it as well. You look at it, it's obviously also being hit just by the fears around NHI and their ARV contribution. The government contracts as well have been called into question after the report over the weekend saying that they were a donor to the CR17 campaign. Yeah. It was 150,000 Rand compared to some of the other donations, which was minor. But absolutely, that is a no-no when you have government contracts. So it's a little bit of a misstep from the company. Overall, though, it is incredibly cheap at the current levels. There is risk because of the gearing in the company, but I would be lying. I think if you see a turnaround, there's a potential for someone like a Glaxo or an AstraZeneca or someone to look at a business like Aspen with its large generic footprint. You might get a buyout offer as well. Like it's possible. So I would be buying Aspen at these levels. Looking at Sasol, Sasol's also suffered just because of the oil price, but obviously the Lake Charles project as well as really got people worried. You look at kind of the cost of the project over the time, it's not like they're going to get a very good return out of it, and that's put a lot of pressure on the share price. And even with the weaker currency, you normally see Sasol acting as a rand hedge, and there's been just one way traffic lower. I do think at some point it is going to become a buy. I do hold it at the moment, but we need to see a turnaround, I suppose, in chemical prices and see some increase in energy prices, and that should help the stock higher.
The next question coming through via SMS says, what's the panel's view on gold and platinum stocks? You're smiling, so you can take that.
I'm smiling because I'm short gold and platinum shares, but I've been short for a while, so it's been painful. And the key is that if you have a pain trade, as it's called, if you have a position that goes against you, especially if you're short, it becomes a bigger problem in your portfolio, which means you need to start very small. So I started very small. It's a bit bigger now, but it's still manageable. So today was good in terms of seeing a turnaround. in gold specifically. So a lot of gold miners are down a lot. Mm-hmm. And basically my premise is just that in times of heightened risk aversion, geopolitical tension like we're having right now, people rush to gold, as they've always done through the centuries. But there's a difference between gold and gold mines. And I have held gold in the past, but I'm not a fan of gold mines because I think that any inflation you get in the top line in terms of high gold prices ultimately mean also that you even either have inflation that's going to pick up or you have some strife that's not good for the cost base of the gold mine. Okay. And the gold mine effectively never captures the true value being added by a much higher gold price. So I'm almost perennially a gold mine bear, even though I could sometimes be a gold bull. Mm-hmm. And at the moment, I'm still short gold and platinum mines, but the key is not very big. Keep it manageable, keep it small.
Your thoughts?
you look at the gold, I mean, the gold price has spiked recently just on, as Jean-Pierre was saying, on the geopolitical tensions. I think one of the concerns around, looking at this as the top of the gold price is also that we seem to be moving into an interest rate, into a turn in the interest rate cycle, and we're seeing rates, especially in the US, coming down. We've also got negative bond yields across the world in many, many developed economies. Now, what happens is gold essentially is a safe haven asset that doesn't pay any sort of dividend or coupons. So, as interest rates go up, it becomes less and less attractive as a safe haven asset. As interest rates go down, it suddenly starts to look more attractive because I could go and get a US Treasury or I could go and get gold and it becomes more equivalent. So it attracts more interest. So at the moment, when we've seen one cut and we've potentially got another two interest rate cuts coming out of the Fed, it still seems early for me to call the top of a gold cycle. So I wouldn't say that I'm short. I would be going short gold at this stage looking for it to come down. That's on the actual physical metal. Mm-hmm. I think there's probably more upside. I'd probably be a buyer on weakness rather. I do think that markets internationally do look expensive, and having some sort of hedge, whether it's via capital protected product or via some sort of safe haven assets, is a good idea. Looking at the gold miners, I mean, absolutely, gold miners have all sorts of problems that are not related to what happens in gold. You have mining strikes. You have all sorts of things that can go wrong with them. You do obviously get the operational leverage as well. So if gold prices are going up, you see exaggerated moves up in gold miners. Those exaggerated moves up, historically, if you look at the long-term trend, are just a good time to go short. So okay. I would be careful. I'd be careful. For me, gold stocks are a trading stock. It's something that you're getting in and out of, on an active basis. It's not something that you're putting in the portfolio and waiting 10 years and hoping it's going to grow, because it's probably not.
Jean-Pierre, this one's for you. Luke wants to know, what is the view on Burford Capital? Is there still an investment case? I know Jean-Pierre said a while back he was monitoring the receivables.
That was
people
a very
listen
interesting
to you.
One,
yes.
No, but that in the week after that, where I said I'm looking at that receivable, there was a short seller report that came out saying that they don't believe the fair value receivable. And the share price halved. So it shows you exactly that the detail of a company's investment case is very important. Reading in the numbers, not just the numbers, but what's behind the numbers, what's the accounting treatment, what are the assumptions. Mm-hmm. And in the case of Burford, I've followed the Muddy Waters Burford situation, and I'm concerned. If you compare Burford to other litigation finance companies that are listed in Australia or in Europe, they use fair value much more than the others. And the problem with fair value is that you have management that make the assumptions regarding what is the fair value of the future receipts that they will get from these litigation matters. And then if you look at what happened in the past in terms of certain disclosure, the fact that the CEO is married to the CFO, but they have different surnames and they never really told anyone, it just adds up to make me concerned.
Yeah.
So I remember on the day that it happened, I had less than 1% of Burford in my global fund. My fund still ended the day up for the day, so I'm glad at least that I didn't get hurt from that situation. But it was a good reminder that in investments, look at both quantitative and qualitative factors. When you see these red herrings, be careful, even if according to just the numbers, it looks like a great business and a very good opportunity.
All right. So we're going to have a quick question before we get to stock picks. Gary, this one's for you. It's from Paul. He wants to know, should I sell or hold CAP?
Oh, I don't cover the company, so I'll pass it to Jean-Pierre.
That's Cap with a K.
Yes.
Yeah. So they came out with a trading statement today. They've been under significant pressure. Mm-hmm. There are some tariffs that could help some of their plastic products in terms of some protection. But still, if you look at the inputs versus the outputs, a lot of their chemicals and products that they sell, it's not looking good. I do think that at this price, about half where it was trading 6 months ago, once again, that interaction between bad expectations, but it being discounted, we're probably close to fair value in Cap, I would say.
All right, stock picks, Gary?
I'm going with Equinix. It's essentially it's a large listed property REIT, so it's a property company, but it creates data centers. So it's another way. We had the question earlier about how to play. Usually play Palo Alto or Cisco. It's another way to play, I suppose, cloud computing without actually holding the computing section of the business. They essentially then rent out server racks and server space to different people. They have many partners. Among their clients are about half of the Fortune 500 companies. So it's a company that's growing very, very rapidly. It is fairly expensive at the stage. It did take a sell-off, as most things did overseas, into December. So the year-to-date kind of return on the stock looks incredible. It's almost 50% up for the year. That is because you were buying off a low base if you started at the 1st of January.
Yeah.
But it is expensive. It's trading on a forward P of about 23, so it is high. But at the same time, if you look at its debt-to-equity ratio, that's been falling quite aggressively. So the balance sheet is getting stronger while the company is growing, which is positive. It's very cash-generative. And all around, it's not really a dividend play, which most REITs are. So, I mean, you can get, you know, if you look at something like one of like the oil companies, like ExxonMobil, for example, you can get a plus 4% dividend in US dollars.
Yeah.
This is just under 2%. So it's not kind of the typical REIT, but you're buying it for growth. You're buying it to get involved in a sector that is fairly exciting and is showing rapid growth.
All right, Jean-Pierre.
Also an offshore share. I think it's now 5 years that I've been picking offshore shares.
Okay.
So that gives you some idea from the previous question of where's the value, locally or offshore.
Uh-huh.
And it's Progressive Insurance. Now, quite often in investments, you can look at a company that you know that's close to heart, close to your home country.
Uh-huh.
And then when you see another company in another country, it reminds you, and you can use some of those principles of what a good business looks at in that industry to consider buying that company.
Yeah.
So Progressive Insurance, I would say, is roughly the OUTsurance of the U.S.
Okay.
They really started direct insurance through the telephone before we had the internet, and then started via the internet selling their policies as well. And they also started with pay-as-you-drive insurance, which means that your premiums escalate with how far you drive. So very good in terms of really pricing for the risk, which is also what direct insurance is all about, getting good underwriting information rather than going through brokers, not knowing exactly what the identities of the people and their risk profile. So Progressive Insurance, listed in the U.S., large insurance player in the short-term market, I think it's reasonably priced and it has good prospects.
All right, gentlemen, thank you so much for your time. Thanks once again to my guests, Jean-Pierre Forster from Protea Capital Management and Gary Boyson from Rand Swiss. We take more of your stock-related questions tomorrow. Have a good evening. Stock picks, Gary?
I'm going with Equinix. It's essentially it's a large listed property REIT, so it's a property company, but it creates data centers. So it's another way. We had the question earlier about how to play. Usually play Palo Alto or Cisco. It's another way to play, I suppose, cloud computing without actually holding the computing section of the business. They essentially then rent out server racks and server space to different people. They have many partners. Among their clients are about half of the Fortune 500 companies. So it's a company that's growing very, very rapidly. It is fairly expensive at the stage. It did take a sell-off, as most things did overseas, into December. So the year-to-date kind of return on the stock looks incredible. It's almost 50% up for the year. That is because you were buying off a low base if you started at the 1st of January.
Yeah.
But it is expensive. It's trading on a forward P of about 23, so it is high. But at the same time, if you look at its debt-to-equity ratio, that's been falling quite aggressively. So the balance sheet is getting stronger while the company is growing, which is positive. It's very cash-generative. And all around, it's not really a dividend play, which most REITs are. So, I mean, you can get, you know, if you look at something like one of like the oil companies, like ExxonMobil, for example, you can get a plus 4% dividend in US dollars.
Yeah.
This is just under 2%. So it's not kind of the typical REIT, but you're buying it for growth. You're buying it to get involved in a sector that is fairly exciting and is showing rapid growth.
All right, Jean-Pierre.
Also an offshore share. I think it's now 5 years that I've been picking offshore shares. Okay. So that gives you some idea from the previous question of where's the value locally or offshore. Uh-huh. And it's progressive insurance. Now, quite often in investments, you can look at a company that you know that's close to heart, close to your home country. Mm-hmm. And then when you see another company in another country, it reminds you, and you can use some of those principles of what a good business looks at in that industry to consider buying that company.
Yeah.
So progressive insurance, I would say, is roughly the outsurance of the U.S.
Okay.
They really started direct insurance through the telephone before we had the internet, and then started via the internet selling their policies as well. And they also started with pay-as-you-drive insurance, which means that your premiums escalate with how far you drive. So very good in terms of really pricing for the risk, which is also what direct insurance is all about, getting good underwriting information rather than going through brokers, not knowing exactly what the identities of the people and their risk profile. So progressive insurance listed in the U.S., large insurance player in the short-term market, I think it's reasonably priced and it has good prospects.
All right, gentlemen, thank you so much for your time. Thanks once again to my guests, Jean-Pierre Foster from Protea Capital Management and Gary Boyson from Rand Swiss. We take more of your stock-related questions tomorrow. Have a good evening.